This is a special Trenches Technology podcast series with your host, Sharon Bueno, managing editor of Trenches Technology Magazine. We're celebrating 50 years of horizontal directional drilling. Marks the golden anniversary for horizontal directional drilling, better known as HDD. What started out as a 500-foot crossing pulling 4-inch pipe under the Pajaro River in Northern California has evolved into a multi-billion dollar global industry. Horizontal directional drilling is critical to the installation of water, sewer, natural gas, electric, telecom, and fiber lines around the world. This three-part Trenches Technology podcast series talks with two of the industry's pioneers and one Trenches expert who has been at the forefront of HDD research and education. First up is the man who invented this game-changing application and is known as the father of HDD, Martin Charrington. Martin has created HDD drilling methodologies and HDD surface equipment as well as in-hole tool designs. He owned Titan Contractors and later Charrington Corporation and is now semi-retired from the industry. He has nearly 30 U.S. patents to his name related to drilling. He was also inducted into the NASTT Hall of Fame in 2016. In this episode, Martin shares his recollections of the early days of horizontal directional drilling and what the keys were to the industry pushing forward to where it is today. He also offers perspective on today's market, which he remains a vital part of at the age of 82. We also learn how former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson unknowingly played a significant role in the development of HDD, so watch out for that. Full disclosure, we were having some audio difficulties in the editing process, and we hope to have that cleared up for future podcasts, so please bear with us. Now here's my conversation with Martin Charrington. I'm welcoming Martin Charrington to the podcast. Hi, Martin.
Hi.
Good seeing you.
That's what I tell myself every morning when I look in the mirror. Boy, it's good to see you.
So as we said, we are celebrating 50 years of horizontal directional drilling. Can you believe that HDD is turning 50?
Well, I can't believe I just turned 84. So it is hard for me to believe that HDD just turned 50. It just seems to me like all the first HDD and all the subsequent following HDDs, it's been kind of a whirlwind, but it just seemed like it was yesterday when I got started.
Now, we talked for the story that we did on directional drilling turning 50. You talked about how at the time, for you, it was just another project. You didn't really think about how inventive it was or innovative it was. When did you realize that it was more than that?
Well, that's interesting. You're right. It was just another project as far as I was concerned. But it was working in Louisiana. We got asked to go down to Louisiana and was working down there. And it was when the Corps of Engineers, I got word from one of the owners that the core engineers liked the HDD method, and they were issuing permits for the HDD. The owners could get permits in 2 months' time compared to 2 years' time for dredging or open cutting a waterway. And right then and there, that was a real blessing for the pipeline owners to be able to get the permits mm-hmm. quickly. And I realized, boy, there's something here. So anyway, I paid a little more attention from that time on.
How soon after did that happen? I mean, from the time you did the first crossing going to Louisiana?
Well, it was probably about a couple of years later, mm-hmm. because the first year was mostly working with Dow Chemical. That's the first client that we had down there, and we had to go through finished their project out, and that took about a year. And then thereafter, there are some other pipeline owners, major pipeline owners. And that's when I got the word that they could get their permits faster, and it was being well received by the Corps of Engineers at that time. Got to remember, that was waterways that didn't have big levees on. If there was levees, that was, we had to work inside the levees at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was before the internet, so they learned about it, you said, by a magazine article.
The magazines played a vital role in the development of the commercialization of mm-hmm. the HDD. When we talked earlier, I was going to mention that to you, of how mm-hmm. important of a role they played mm-hmm. in moving that technology ahead.
You also mentioned Dow Chemical, and when we talked earlier, you mentioned how their role was really in pushing the HDD method into the construction circles early on. Talk about that relationship and what they did do for this industry.
They, out of the clear blue, we just barely finished up some of the projects for PG&E in the Northern California here. And there's a couple of little articles, again, back to the magazines, back to the trade journals. They crossed the river, PG&E crossed the river drilling underneath it. Well, the next thing I knew, I had a call from Louisiana, and they wanted to know if we couldn't come down there and look at their projects and everything. They had a major project going on. It seemed like it was from Plaquemine, Louisiana, which is across the river, Mississippi, from Baton Rouge. But it started out there, and then it ended up in somewhere in Texas, the pipeline that they had. It's a petrochemical line, glycol, ethylene, one of those things. But anyway, they called and wanted, they said they had a whole series of rivers to cross, and they asked if we wouldn't come down. They sent me a ticket to come down there. I went down, met with them in the middle of the night, and then the next day they put me on their float plane, flew me over these crossings, existing crossings that's been dredged over, and gave me a bird's eye view of the damage that was caused by open cutting the pipeline crossing. At that time, and it was kind of interesting to me, they said the river crossings, waterway crossings, river crossings was the weakest link in the pipeline chain. That's where they had to put an extra line across the river because the lines couldn't be mm-hmm. put very deep. And so a ship anchor happened to hit the one line or a spud from a spud barge, you know, damaged the line or erosion or anything else. And that one line went out, they could switch over to the spare line to keep that pipeline active and keep it going. It was interesting. And so that's something that I think everyone has forgot about, is that even though it was a single line going across country, when it come to that river, it became two lines, and all the piping going back and forth and valving and everything, it was a big expense. And maintenance, and then the maintenance to the riverbanks and everything. It was a very costly operation they had on that river crossing waterway area right here. So it was truly the weak link in that pipeline chain.
So they wanted to know if it's possible to use that method.
When they heard that we drilled a line up in, you know, PG&E, they wanted to hear more about it, and they wanted me down there, and they wanted me to see what the problem is. And then from that point on, I had a tour of a lot of the jobs that they are crossings that they had. Most of them was bayous. The largest crossing at that time was the Shafalaya, and I told them there's just no way in hell could we do that type of job. It was a 24-inch, 2,000-foot crossing, and it was just unheard of. I mean, we just come off, you know, the job that we come off from PG&E, And that first job was only a 4-inch line, about 600 feet long. So I told them there's just no way we could do that. But the other ones, it was within reason. And I told them, though, I said, we didn't have the money. And they said, don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. And I look at that. They were the ones who really helped, really, truly develop it, mm-hmm. helped the development and the commercialization of it. And also, the magazines, the trade journals, played such a vital role in that. I still have some of my old magazines and everything, and it's amazing. I go look at them periodically, and it's kind of laughable looking at the equipment mm-hmm. and the tooling and the cast of characters out there that was doing the work.
So what were your thoughts, I guess, on about HDD in the early years? Did you think it could be a viable industry, or did you just think it was a unique application that you could use every once in a while in your work as a contractor?
Well, at the very beginning, I just thought it was another job. I didn't think too much about it. And there was, you know, one thing for sure, in the South, in Louisiana and Texas and all through that mm-hmm. Gulf state, they got lots of waterways and they got lots of pipelines. And that was something new for me as well. I come from Northern California, where there's logging and mining and civil type activities, dams, bridges, and stuff like that. But, you know, there's water pipelines and mm-hmm. stuff like that, but not these mammoth jobs, pipeline jobs that you have in Louisiana. So that was a real eye-opening experience for me. And it took me a while before I could really understand the gravity of all of that. So it took me a couple of years before I figured, well, you know, I think there's something here.
We also talked, when we talked for the story, you mentioned EPRI's role in advancing HDD. And talked about how it tied in with former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson's work to beautify America. Can you explain to people about that, who may not be aware of that connection?
Well, yeah. First of all, I think the people within the industry, HDD industry, knows that a lot of people don't realize that there's actually two industries out there, two HDD industries, and they come from different sources. There are different technologies and methodologies and cultures and all that. And the pipeline end of things, the river crossing, that came first. That came in the 70s, early 70s, and that's what I was involved with. And a lot of the technology really came from the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. The utility industry, that really came from Lady Bird Johnson, but well, it was a result of her beautification program. What was it? Highway beautification something. And she wanted to get rid of all the billboards and Burma shaved signs and take down all the overhead telephone lines and mm-hmm. power lines and such as that. And most of the power company, they complied, and they started putting lines underground. Unfortunately, the lines that they were putting underground wasn't really designed for any long life in the ground. They put these cables in the ground, in the back of easements, in the back of subdivisions and what all. And the over few years, when the gophers started eating the sheaths up, and the sheaths just broke, the protective sheath on the cable started to break down, mm-hmm. and tremendous outages occurred across the nation. And so it's interesting that the major power companies, they all donate a fraction of their revenues or whatever to the company called EPRI, and that's Electrical Power Research Institute or something like that. And they, because of all these outages across these failures of power cables across the nation, they cast EPRI to come up with a solution how they can get back in these easements, which was at now years have passed, and those easements have houses in there, they got fences, they got barbecue pits, trees, everything else. So it was impossible. It was just really very difficult and expensive to get back and to replace those damaged lines with new lines. And so they tasked EPRI to come up with a method of how to do that. And they did. And I was involved in that. They had some workshops, and I was in one of those workshops and listened to what was going on, what they wanted and everything. And foolishly, I didn't follow through. I thought it was just a folly what they were trying to do. And little did I know that they had quite a bit of money to develop. They had $10.3 million to develop something. Today, that's about $20 million.
Wow.
And I didn't realize that. And I didn't know how to really deal with grant money and how to get that type of thing. But a company out of Washington called Flow Industries, they dealt with high pressure jets that would cut steel, cut wood, cut cloth and everything, like they 30,000-50,000 PSI. Well, they were sitting there, they were involved in those meet workshops as well, and they knew, they understood grant money and everything, and they got the contract. And they developed the drilling company, the utility type drilling equipment that we see today that is made by a Ditch Witch or Vermeer and those companies. Mm-hmm. And so but Flomo developed, or EPRI and Flomo together, they worked and developed that walkover survey system and drilling system right there. And anyway, that's how that industry got started. And it still basically uses the same principles. And the only thing is Flow Industry. It started out as Flomo, their company, and then they changed it to Utilex, and then I don't know where it's at today, but you know, it's somewhere. But they were designing and building equipment for themselves, but at the same time of them developing that equipment and then Flomo developing equipment for themselves to do all this electrical power replacement, well, fiber optics came along too with the telecommunication industry. Used to be before fiber optics, people don't realize they had these big microwave towers all over the country, but they wanted to do away with those because, you know, we're in the nuclear age back in that era, and they thought that was a risky business just to have microwave towers. I mean, fiber optics was a little more secure. So the fiber optics came along. And the problem of it is, Flomo, that's all they could do to build enough equipment for their own use. But now there's other needs for this HDD work. It just so happens that Ditch Witch and Vermeer was in the Goldilocks zone. They were already involved in the utility industry work. They had distributorships out there. It couldn't have been more right for them to be to pick up that slack and to start building that equipment. And that all happened, I think Ditch Witch started somewhere around 1989. And then I think Vermeer was just 91 or 92, somewhere in that area. A couple of years later, they entered the business. But anyway, kind of a long-winded story, but it is a long-winded story, but it's an interesting one, but it tells the roots of how the utility industry got started. And I love history like that myself. So I always wanted to know, where did it come from?
Just interesting that 20 years after Lady Bird Johnson's idea about beautifying America, she helped propel the HDD industry. She had no idea.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. She started something that was kind of a mandate, regulatory type thing, which then that's kind of spawned the FLOMO thing, which now spawned the Ditchwitch and Vermeer. And that was, and then it kind of, at that time, it was more of a economic type of thing for contractors out there. But now I always look at things as kind of interesting. What drives business, or what you want to call it? Is it economic? Is it regulatory, or is it economic? And it seems like it flips back and forth all the time.
You were a utility contractor for a long time before you got involved in HDD. Did you switch over to just doing directional drilling when this kind of took off, or did you?
I started out being familiar with drilling, actually working for a telecommunication contractor that put in cross-country, big, heavy copper cables. They could be 3.5, 4 inch in diameter, and they would go cross-country with these big copper wire-paired cables. And I worked for them, and they developed some. So that was, you could say that's more of a transmission type of a line, major cross-country line. But they came across waterways and stuff like that, and not big ones. I mean, I'm talking about small crossways. And they developed some tools to drill in those lines. So I kind of got familiar with that drilling way back then. And to answer your question, prior to 1964, I thought to myself, well, I want to be in business for myself. And I said, I think I could. And here in Sacramento, at that time, there was, I think there's 37 different water companies, small little water companies. And there was, at that time, the Bell Systems were still there, Pacific Bell. And then there was the power companies and the PG&E and then Sacramento Utility District or something like that. And so I thought, well, I can make up this little machine and I will go out and drill in their service lines for them. And I did. And I started out just drilling across roads, railroads and stuff like that. And then later on, I started drilling not across the street, but along the street and everything. We'd go out there 1,000, 1,500 feet putting in, like they're doing today in Ditchwitch or Vermeer, or those type of machines. That's what they're doing today. But I was doing that way back. Well, then at the same time when I had that business going on, that's when, early 70s, that's when I developed that surface-to-surface under the river crossing. And so I stayed with both of those industries. I had a river crossing business going on. And then also I still maintain a utility business. So those companies ran parallel until the 80s. And then I finally auctioned off all the utility equipment and I focused solely on river crossing.
So you probably have done some pretty cool projects over the years. Do any stand out in particular? Or,
you know, I started out, as we talked earlier, with in the petrochemical steel pipeline jobs, and then that went on to oil and gas steel pipelines, and then took in water lines and wastewater, gradually started to do more and more unusual jobs. One of the first jobs, the very first in the 70s, it was a company I had called Titan Contractors. And I sold that company to an oil and gas drilling company and pipeline company called Reading and Bates. I had a covenant of non-competition for 5 years. And so I manufactured some equipment, but then when that covenant non-competition ended, I started a company called Charrington Corporation. Now, Sterlington Corporation in the early mid-80s, we got a call in the San Francisco Bay Area to come down and to drill in, which was just unheard of, but to drill in, pull in some HDPE sewer lines. Well, that was a disaster. We had five little small creeks that we pulled in pipe, pulled in this, oh, it was a 10, 12 inch sewer lines, and we pulled them in. And for some reason, the very last one, we had to pull a little bit extra pipe in. And we noticed when we pulled that pipe out that that pipe was collapsed. And it looked like you took a soda straw,
mm-hmm.
you put your thumb or your finger over the end, and then you suck on it. Well, the straw would just go flat. And this pipe that we, extra pipe we pulled out, it was flat, and we kept pulling, and the more we pulled, the more it was just flat, flat, flat. And then we went ahead and tried to pull the other ones out. We did, and we was able to. It was ideal ground. We pulled those out, and they were completely collapsed, flat. And there was finger pointing all around everything, and we finally figured out, and it took another outside consultant, engineer. Now this is where the engineers come in at. They was able to keep the one engineer, still a great friend of mine, he's in his 90s now, and he's completely retired, Harold Anderson. But anyway, he came out, he looked at, he did some calculations, and he says, very simply, he says, well, it's the design fault. He says, you've got the wall thickness is not heavy enough to withstand the outside pressure, the hydrostatic pressure. And he said, and it was just a very thin wall. Well, it just collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the beginning of the HDD, pulling in HDD pipes at that time.
That's interesting.
It was a disaster, but it worked out. Yeah. So those are the notable, there was other notable jobs that I think the other notable job is 77, 78, and that's when we first put in a large a pipeline. You know, the other interesting thing is that, you know, right now we always talk about a three-step HDD, a pilot hole, a reaming phase, and then the pulling in of the pipe. That was not always that way from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There was an evolution of different variations of how we were trying to drill this in. And most of this work that we were working with, it was 12 inch and smaller pipes that we're putting in. We had different methods. We didn't use the three-step method at that time. There was other methods that we were using to get those pipes in. And it just so happens in 77, 78, we developed a method for putting in large diameter pipe, the large is 30 inch. That time. And then also at that same time, we had other crews working. We had this one crew experimenting, and that's where we at the same time come up with the three-step HDD. So both of those events happened in that time frame right there. So that was a significant milestone drilling that was going on at that time.
You're also known as an innovator. You're not just a contractor. Obviously, you're an innovator. You invented HDD, but you also have quite a few patents to your name. Is it like close to 30 or more patents?
Yeah.
Are those more like tooling, or is that what?
Well, most of my patents relate to HDD. And it's interesting. If you look at them, a lot of them pertain to getting cuttings out of the borehole.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's always been a problem of how to get the cuttings out of the borehole. So most of those cuttings most of those patents pertain to that. But they vary from like apparatus patterns or method patterns of how you do things or how equipment is, items are made and everything.
But looking back as an innovator too, what are some of the critical technological advancements that have happened in HDD over the years that have really pushed the industry, made it more efficient and better? I mean, when we talk for the story, I know you mentioned specifically the steering tool that came in the late 70s, you said. It shortened up the length of time it was to locate or follow the core.
Yeah, that's right. And I've always felt that that was probably one of the most significant advancements to the industry, to the HDD industry, primarily, again, to the river crossing industry. Mm-hmm. The survey system in the prior to, we'll just say 1980, really, I think it's a little bit earlier than that, I think it's 79. But at any rate, we had a tool called, used a survey tool called a single shot. The single shot was developed by the oil and gas industry in 1929, and they've been using it to 1979. And this tool was, well, we thought it was really the hottest thing since sliced bread. You know, we thought that was a great tool, and everyone else did. They used it for many years, but it was a tool that you had to pump down a compass, and it was assembly, had a compass, it had a camera and a timer, and you put, and every time you drilled a joint in, or two joints, or whatever, at any time you wanted to survey, you had to actually pump this survey tool down. It had a wire line on it, and had a winch up on the drill rig. We'd pump it down, and it would hit the very bottom hole assembly. It would hit down there, and it would lock itself in, and it would tell you the inclination, and it would tell you the azimuth, what direction are you drilling, north or where you're drilling. And it would also tell you what they call the tool face. That tells you if your tool is drilling up or to the left, or to the right, or whatever. It gives you those three. But you pump it down, and sometimes on a big long job, I remember on the Shafalaya using that tool, it took almost an hour we set the timer on it for an hour, and we'd get it down and get. And you think about it, you pump that down and you've got this wire line, it's horizontal, there's a tremendous drag on it. God, we're pumping those down with big Halliburton trucks to, you know, big pumps. Just really just anything to do to get them down there, you know. But the product took a long time, and then a lot of times you pull it back and you find that you didn't really get down there. It was just a black. And we develop it, once the camera come back, you develop that film up on top, and you look at this little coupon, it looked like a little poker chip or something like that. You'd look at it, and it could tell you all these variables that you're looking for. And sometimes it'd come back just black, but you wasted a lot of time. The hole was not very straight. Mm-hmm. The porosity of the hole was just all over. It was just a god awful. I'm surprised we got any pipes in the hole, because a snake couldn't crawl in those holes. What we call now today a steering tool, that is that positioned and locked into place in at the bottom hole assembly. Mm-hmm. And there's a electrical wire. It started out electrical. Sometimes they have other means of getting that information back, but normally there is electrical wire, and it gave you real time constant readout. Mm-hmm. At any time you knew exactly where your tool facing was, what direction you're going, what the inclination is. That only, at times, we only averaged 30 feet of drill pipe a day, pilot hole of drilling, 30 feet.
Wow.
We'd be out there 12 hours out there and come back on the just productive time, 30 feet a day. So that's how bad it was. And the hole wasn't really good. But at that time, the owner, they didn't care where we came out at. They just wanted it. Well, I asked him, he said, well, where do you want this to come out of? They said, on the underside of the river. And that was it. They didn't care. They were just happy to get a line across there, you know. Well, it's not that way today. I mean, they want it right on the mark, you know, and they can do it. But it's not with the help of that old single shot tool. It's with help with some pretty sophisticated steering tools. And now they've got gyros involved in these steering tools. They're remarkable tools they have today. But what a difference. That's what I think was the greatest significant advancement to the industry. That made a big difference.
How would you describe today's HDD market, and maybe what do you see as ahead for it? I mean, right now we have such long lengths. I mean, your first crossing was 500, 600 feet. I know you said it was longer. You said it was closer to 600 feet now. But now there's like, they're thousands upon thousands of feet long, and the diameters are so large, much larger for river crossings, obviously, for pipeline projects. So how would you describe today's market overall?
You know, I look at things kind of differently at times. If HDD didn't exist, what would the landscape look like, you know? And at what cost, you know? It would just be whatever the alternative would be, a lot costlier. Open cutting would be a lot costlier. The maintenance, everything would look bad. So I think that HDD is going to be with us. It's going to evolve to even greater lengths and be able to do more difficult type of jobs. I think these transitions from rock to soft ground, I think there's a lot of work to be done there. I think Levin Osgemeyer from used to be with Colorado School of Mines. He's doing classes soil stabilization. I always think of certain, if you don't like the soil, then change it some way. You can change it by various ways. Jet grouted, you can create, you know, concrete grout walls and underground. And so I think that the evolution will continue, and I think that we'll be able to work in these transition areas. So the jobs, they're going to get more demanding, and we've got to build the equipment and the technologies and the methodologies, and it'll come. Nothing stands still. It's always moving all the time. I think it's going to get a little more sophisticated, the equipment. That's bound to, my God, I used to tear a car all the way, engine all the way out, completely tear it apart, transmission, differential. I used to tear them apart and put them back together again and everything, and put new parts in. That was a number of years ago. Now I still can't find my oil filter in my car now today, you know. It's just crazy, you know. So we're going to follow this, but my car can do a whole lot more today than it could way back then. So I think we're going to have more sophistication to the equipment, to the methodologies and everything, but it's going to do a whole lot more out there too. That's what I predict. And I think I'm going to be right on it. It's just bound to come. Look at your phone. You know, the first cell phone, I remember my first mobile phone. It was a strap. You had a strap around you, a big old purse. Remember those things way back then? Mike, and it wasn't worth a damn, those phones. You know, can you hear me now? But look at them now. They're not phones, they're computers. I mean, they're just, good God, and the prices. I think that first phone I got was something like $2,500. Now you can, computer power you can use to go to the moon on, you know? And that's the way things change, you know?
But, yeah, progress marches on. I just have one final question for you. Enjoyed talking with you this afternoon. What are you doing today? You're a young man in your 80s. I know you're still active in the industry. I wouldn't consider you retired at all. What kind of things are you still working on?
Well, I have been working on something. The industry has been plagued with since day one. The regulatory agencies are really starting to crack down, and that is the, we try to put lipstick on that pig, what do they call it? Inadvertent
returns,
yeah,
yeah,
frack outs. And so I've been working on frackless type of drilling tools, and it looks pretty good. I'm afraid I'm one of those people that's going to make it more sophisticated. You know, I hate to take that shoulder that, but you know, if you're going to want this stuff, it is going to be a little more sophisticated. But it is available. It is within reach of having tools that won't frack out.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's what I've been working on for the last five. Well, I've been working on for a long, long, long time. In fact, the first job, which I really didn't realize, started back in 77 on that 30-inch pipe. That's when we first realized it was a frackless type of a system right there.
Yeah.
And so I've been working on that. I don't know how many generations of that I've come up with now, but just about ready to hit the market.
Well, that sounds interesting. I mean, like I said, you've been an innovator the entire time, so I expect no less that you're still innovating.
Yeah. I do it mostly just out of desperation to put beans on the table. You know? Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I want to thank you for taking the time this afternoon. It was really interesting. It's like having an oral history of directional drilling. It's fascinating. So that wraps up another Trenchless Technology podcast. I want to thank Martin Charrington for joining me. To learn all about the things going on in the trenchless world, check out the latest issue of Trenchless Technology, including my cover story on HDD turning 50 in the April issue. You can find it in your mailbox, inbox, or online at trenchlesstechnology.com. This has been a Trenchless Technology podcast. To hear more of my conversations about the trenchless industry, go to trenchlesstechnology.com/podcast.